Okay, if you're, excuse me. Okay, if everybody's ready, we'll call the next case, which is case number 63078, SFR Investments, Pool Number 1 versus U.S. Bank National Association. We have Ms. Gilbert, Ms. Klein, and Mr. Panoff on behalf of the appellants, and Mr. Stern on behalf of the respondent. So, Ms. Gilbert, you may proceed, and do you wish to reserve any time in rebuttal?
Chief?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Mrs. Douglas?
Actually, I'd like to make a disclosure, although it is of ancient history. The fact of the matter is that Ms. Gilbert had served in the first year of my first term as my law clerk. That does not, in my mind, create a disqualifying position for me, and I make that statement only for the record to be clean and clear.
Ms. Gilbert, how many minutes would you like in rebuttal?
4 minutes, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, three?
4 minutes.
Four.
Okay,
thank you. And Justice Perigary will participate in the decision of this case, even though he's not present today. He will listen to the oral arguments. With that, I think you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the Court. Jacqueline Gilbert, Diana Klein, Jesse Panoff on behalf of SFR Investments Pool 1, LLC. SFR was not the HOA. SFR is not the collection company that held the foreclosure sale. SFR attended a publicly advertised, publicly held foreclosure auction and made the highest bid at that auction. It's a third-party purchaser. This auction took place 3 years after the borrower, the bank's borrower, defaulted on its association assessments and surrendered the house in bankruptcy and left the burden, both the bank, Bank of America and U.S. Bank, left the burden of taking care of the house to the non-defaulting homeowners that live in the association. In April 2012, the bank received its, or recorded its foreclosure mediation certificate. It still did nothing and left the association without an ability to collect its assessments. So the association decided to foreclose, and SFR obtained title to the property. Just like the last case, the district court gave the bank a pass on its inaction. The district court here differently, though, got it right on extinguishment. It had to necessarily determine that prior means prior, and that foreclosure of an association lien will extinguish a first deed of trust. What it made errors in and led to its wrong conclusion was that without doing a proper state actor analysis to even determine if due process is implied, let alone violated, it determined that there was no notice requirement to the first deed of trust holder. Because of that, it determined there was a violation of due process, again, without doing the analysis. And because it determined that there was no necessity for notice, it, in using the constitutional avoidance doctrine, said then action must mean lawsuit. It didn't need to reach that because notices are absolutely required under the statutes. On NRS 31163 and 311635 necessarily say that the holder of a recorded security interest who has notified the association of the existence of the security interest must receive the notice of default and the notice of sale. In Nevada, a person has notified the world of its interest if it records under 111.315 and under 111.320 of the contents of the notice. Then, as was discussed earlier, is 107.090 requires, is incorporated into 116 in full. Justice Hardesty, the entire statute comes in. And the noticing requirements that are under 107.090 are that a junior security interest, a subordinate interest, must receive notice. And since the deed of trust is junior to at least a portion of the association's lien, which is only one lien, by the way, then the association has an affirmative duty to go to the recorder site, find out who's subordinate. It does that usually through a trustee's guarantee, goes to a title guarantee, gets the information from the title company, which gives it to the trustee who's going to sell, whether it's under 107 or 116, and then the trustee who's holding the sale, the private trustee in both cases, will send out the notices.
Let me ask you this on the notice, and it's kind of a hypothetical, but it may play into what you said. Let's say the homeowner who had defaulted and not paid the association had entered into a contract to sell the property to a third party and defaulted on that contract, and the third party is sued for specific performance and recorded a list pendens against the property. With me. So list pendens is a record. Does that person suing for specific performance with the list pendens have a right to notice from on the sale of this property?
I believe so, Your Honor. I think anybody, when they go get the trustee's sale guarantee, the title company is going to pull anybody who has a potential interest in the property, and they're going to notice everybody. And under a hypothetical, and what we've seen in other cases, and not I can't specifically talk to this case, is that the bank, the taxing authority, even though it is actually superior to the homeowners association lien, has an absolute exception, receives notice. They pretty much notice the world.
Ms. Gilbert, in the findings of fact entered by the judge in this case, there is no finding that I see where the court concluded that notice of the HOA sale was given to the lender.
I understand, Your Honor, and she did make that finding. She believed that under, first, the bank in this case.
I don't see a finding.
Finding fact that notice was given.
Right.
And.
Do you disagree with that?
I do disagree with that.
Which finding does the judge recite that notice of the trustee's sale was given to the lender?
No, I apologize, Your Honor, and I misspoke. The judge does not make his finding that notice was given. The judge, in this case, that the facts that were
was
on the record.
Was there anything in the record that addressed that point?
There was in the record, similar to the last cases, the trustee's deed with the conclusive presumption that notice was done according to the law.
Yeah, paragraph 6 says the HOA recorded the notice of trustee's sale on September 29th,
correct.
And that's preceded by the fact that the association apparently recorded the notice of delinquent assessment lien for $1,225.19, but it doesn't reflect that there was any notice given to the lender of the notice of delinquent assessment lien, but it also doesn't address whether the lender objected to the absence of notice. What's the record in this case?
The record in this case is that this was a motion to dismiss.
Right.
SFR alleged that notice was properly given to the lender, that they had notice of it. The lender never denied that. They never made an affirmative allegation that they did not receive notice. And because it, again, was relatively early, there was no findings. SFR relied on the trustee's deed, which said that notice was given. We have the notices. Again, SFR is not in possession of that and is entitled to rely on those notices.
So the lender in this case did not challenge the procedural steps taken by the HOA that resulted in your client's trustee sale.
I believe that in the record, and I can't point you to the exact paragraph, they may have said that the statutes don't require that they get it, but they never made an affirmative statement that they did not.
Okay. So the record, from your point of view, is deficient on any claim on the part of the lender that they didn't get notice?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Again, as we spoke, I believe that the notices that were recorded, the notice of default and the notice of sale, were sent to the pursuant to statute, are required to be sent, and according to the trustee's deed, met the requirements of law. So they would have received them. And that SFR, as a third-party purchaser, doesn't have to prove that one way or another. They're entitled to require. If the bank didn't get receive notice, then its issue is with the trustee who held the trustee's sale, not with the third-party purchaser. It's a wrongful foreclosure. They could have filed that. They didn't. The third-party purchaser has no means. They're not required to give notice. They're not in charge of it, and they don't have the information. The district court decided that because the statute, it didn't believe the statute required the notice, it then said due process was violated if there was no judicial action. It never made the finding that there was a state act or a state action. I believe had it done that analysis, and this court would be the first time that anybody who is challenging constitutionality, because SFR does not, will find that there is no state actor, there's no reason to apply that legal fiction to a homeowners association, and there certainly was no state action. The state's not involved in any part of the process of non-judicial foreclosure, just as it isn't in a deed of trust sale.
But they did raise the issue of that you have to use judicial foreclosure for this type of proceeding. Now, whether it's a due process violation or not, though, that was raised in district court, and the judge agreed with it.
No, it was raised in district court, Your Honor.
Tell us why you think the judge was wrong in saying that you have to have a judicial foreclosure here and the definition of the word action.
Okay. I believe there were two reasons. First, she only went to action because she believed there was a lack of notice. And so I don't believe that she ever needed to go there. And I think she was just trying to fix a due process issue that didn't exist. But even
that's why
then,
I posed the question. She said there's a lack of notice, but the record doesn't indicate there is a lack of notice.
Correct. And so I believe that didn't need to happen. Second, action here, as was discussed in the earlier case, it's the institution of an action to enforce the lien and has to be looked in context. And that phrase was lifted directly from the UCIOA. In other words, the legislature didn't say, oh, we're going to use this phrase because this means to do a lawsuit in Nevada. It lifted that phrase verbatim from the UCIOA. The UCIOA fully intended, if you look at the comments to the UCIOA, and if you look at the JEB report, that they fully intended that whatever the foreclosure process that was going to be used by the state would be whatever that institution of an action would be and would have the same result, because we want to look for that. What's the result of a foreclosure, whatever the process is, that it will be extinguishment. So there's nothing to limit institution of an action in the UCIOA, and this court just recently said, let's look historically as to how this was used. The UCIOA is where it was historically used. Henry L. Judy, who was general counsel for Freddie Mac at the time that UCA was done, the Condominium Act, wrote contemporaneously with that act that the foreclosure, preferably by sale, would result in extinguishment, and that, he said, quote, priority of the association's lien will not depend upon the nature of the chosen foreclosure remedy.
Where are you quoting from?
I'm sorry, Your Honor, that would be in, it's the Uniform Condominium Act. I think it's cited in our reply brief. The Nevada Real Estate Division got it right. They looked at the UCIOA. They looked at the non-judicial, what the legislature did. It gave non-judicial foreclosure as a remedy. It didn't direct you to Chapter 40.
Ms. Gilbride, I know there's about 3 minutes left. Did you want to reserve that?
I would, Your Honor.
Thank
unless
you.
There's somebody, a specific question.
Okay. Well, why don't we hear from Mr. Stern? And
thank you, Your Honor.
I'm going to put Mr. Stern on the spot here to see if he agrees with Ms. Schuller-Heinz on the issue of the super priority for the 9 months. Does that have priority over a
no,
first
Justice,
deed of trust?
And no, Justice Gibbons. Do not
okay.
do not agree with Ms. Schuller-Heinz on that. And we'll start with that. A lot of our argument also has to do with due process. I think we can, and I'd like to say now that that kind of presumes that there is a super priority, but we don't concede that. To the contrary, we believe the statute, in our view, plainly preserves the priority of the deed of trust. Otherwise,
you don't accept the concession that prior counsel made?
No, Justice Baker.
Okay.
We do not. And frankly, in order to accomplish the result that SFR wants here, which is to take this to wipe out this $885,000 deed of trust with this $6,000 purchase, we would have to read NRS 116.31162B completely out of the statute. If SFR is right, and if the pre-existing deed of trust is wiped out, what is that statute doing there, subsection 2B? It says plainly the deed of trust is senior to the HOA's lien.
It goes on to say that, however, you're up to 9 months, this is a super priority on that. So how do you reconcile those two provisions?
The way we reconcile those in our brief, Justice Gibbonson, this conforms with what the industry has done for years before this became an issue, is to hold that the HOA has a lien that survives the bank's deed of trust. And when the bank forecloses its deed of trust, the super priority portion at that point attaches. And so it's not any, there's no doubt that there is a lien, not simply a payment priority. We don't argue that. In our view, it is a lien. It is capable of forcing a sale. The disagreement here, I think, with SFR is when does that lien attach?
So you're saying it's subordinate to the deed of trust, the first deed of trust, that lien?
Correct, Justice Gibbs. Not only is it subordinate, it's inchoate. It doesn't even attach until our deed of trust is foreclosed, and so it never had an opportunity to be prior.
Justice Hardesty.
Mr. Strand, the basis of your position is reliance on industry practice. That's an interesting authority. I think most of us would look at UQA, look at the how UQA was developed, the interpretation afforded to it by this most recent report, the approach taken by the Division of Real Estate. What authority do you provide to us that says that we should look to how the industry has just done it for the past 10 years?
I have no such authority, and I don't point the court to that as authority.
Then what is the basis for your position? I presume it's directed at statutory interpretation rules of construction.
That is correct, Justice Hardesty. It is
so
a question.
So what would the analysis be from your point of view in handling the language after the flush line?
A number of doctrines, I think, come into play, Justice Hardesty. We started with a plain language, as all courts do. Mm-hmm. I think if we look at the multiplicity of opinion among the district judges and the federal judges, we may believe that the statute is ambiguous. Once the statute is ambiguous, we look at legislative history. We look at public policy. We look at other portions of the statute, of both Chapter 116 and other statutes, to read all of the provisions harmoniously. I'll address both. First of all, the plain language. The plain language is found in subsection 2B. It says, the bank's deed of trust is senior. There is no way to reconcile that harmoniously. Let me phrase it this way. It is not a harmonious reconciliation between that language and subsection 2C to simply say subsection 2B doesn't apply. And that is, the effect of determining that the HOA lien can wipe out the bank's deed of trust.
Well, you would agree that in J.E. Dunn, we described at some length in excruciating detail the importance of the flush line in a statute and its application of the language to all of the subsections in the section. Do you agree with that?
I agree with that, Justice Hardesty. And despite,
so what do you make of the language, the lien is also prior to all security interests described in paragraph B to the extent of any charges incurred by the association, et cetera, up for a period of 9 months?
What we make of it, Justice Hardesty, is that it's a limited priority. It is limited in two ways. It's capped at 9 months, so there is a limit in the amount. Mm-hmm. In addition to the limit in the amount, in our view, it limits the ability of the HOA sale to wipe out the deed of trust.
And this was my question. You've argued, and I think the prior counsel argued for the lender, that this isn't a lien in the true sense of a lien, that it's a payment lien.
I do not argue that, Justice.
Oh, you don't get that?
No. And I believe that statute, plain language, it's prior and it's a lien, and we acknowledge it, that it's a lien. we don't believe, however, that means that it discharges the deed of trust, because what the statute leaves unsaid, first of all, the statute doesn't say that at all. It says it's prior. It doesn't even say when it attaches. We believe that the best interpretation, going from the plain language of, and this goes into the institution of a judicial action, is that the super priority attaches only when the bank forecloses. And again, I'm not saying, well, the HOAs have been doing it this way, and therefore that's what the law is, but it's the best reconciliation of all of the interests here. And
so if we were to interpret it in the manner you suggest, a lien which was designed, at least according to the report by the uniform law folks as to UQA, to provide a funding source for homeowners associations and a protection for their budgets, would be wholly dependent on when a lender ultimately decides when, if it intends to foreclose.
I disagree that it would be wholly dependent. Justice Hardesty, it would be dependent only to the extent of 9 months.
Well, no, you just said that the determination of the nine-month lien amount would be triggered only upon your notice of default.
I'm sorry, I understand the question.
And if that's your argument, then it would seem like this budget-protecting program that was set forth in UQA and is outlined in 116 leaves the homeowners association on the whim of the lender to initiate its notice of default. Is that your argument?
No, Justice Hardesty. There is nothing stopping the HOA from doing what it did in this case, which is to foreclose. The issue is discrete. The issue is, does that foreclosure wipe out the deed of trust? And the HOA can foreclose, collect, as was the case here, a $6,000 amount of revenue, which is sufficient to meet the HOA's needs, without disturbing the seniority of the deed of trust. And this is, again, looking at the totality of the statute and the public policy and the legislative history, this satisfies everybody's interest. It satisfies the HOA's interest. They're able to foreclose. It satisfies the bank's interest and incidentally, the HOA's interest, because the HOA in this case, Southern Highlands, doesn't want to wipe out the deed.
But it
seems, that's when they're CC&Rs.
But it seems odd that the statute would create for the Homeowners Association two different types of liens and then provide that they're going to be foreclosed in exactly the same way. Why would the legislature create or designate a lien for certain items for 9 months and then have a lien for a whole bunch of other stuff and additional amounts after 9 months, but say that it can only foreclose in the same way as to all of it?
I believe the method of foreclosure, first of all, we agree that the method of foreclosure here should be judicial action, but assuming that we're...
We're not even to the method of foreclosure yet. I'm just trying to figure out what's being foreclosed.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood your question. Sorry, I apologize for that. There's a number of competing interests here, two principal competing interests. One is to get the revenue to the HOA. That is satisfied by having the HOA levy assessments and foreclose as Southern Highlands did in this case. There is the competing interest. There's the additional interest of having some of that revenue come from the bank because it guarantees a minimum amount. And I think the legislative history we discuss here in our briefs explains that the amount went from 6 months. It was contemplated to come to 2 years because of the delays that the banks had. Came back to 9 months.
I read Mr. Elfelman's testimony.
Right. And so the idea, first of all, in our view, that would not make sense at all. If the HOA discharged the deed of trust, what would be the reason of in requiring the bank to resetting it at 9 rather than, or even 2 years, rather than 6 months, if either time the HOA can foreclose?
You made a statement and it bounced off my ear, but you said everybody was happy with because I got paid. What did SFR buy in your from your position? What did they buy?
They bought what they paid for, a $6,000 house. This is an $885,000 deed of trust, Your Honor.
That's what they bought?
They bought,
In our view, what they bought is a property encumbered by the first deed of trust, and that's why they paid $6,000, not close to $1 million, which is what our deed of trust was for. And so the suggestion, I think, that was made in I think it was in the reply brief, and it may be implicit in your question, Justice Douglas, is that unfair to SFR?
What's their interest, I guess? Why should they even bother to buy anything if just getting this strange interest? Because you're saying, well, you still have this loan out there for the property, this encumbrance, so to speak, you're saying, which they're not in privity, so to speak.
We agree we're not in privity, and that's why we believe we haven't even gotten to this. There is state action. But Justice Douglas, what they're getting is the use and enjoyment of the property for an undetermined amount of time until the bank forecloses. And during that, and $6,000, we would suggest, is a very good price for that. And they get to collect rental.
So in the only way that you don't foreclose is they start paying you.
I don't know.
That's why I'm asking. If you don't know, how do we know?
Justice Douglas, I can't speak to whether...
I'm trying to figure out, because you said everybody was happy based on this. Obviously, everybody is not happy.
Yeah. Well, SFR is not going to be happy if it doesn't get an $885,000 property paying only $6,000. If they don't get that, they won't be happy. I'll concede that.
Mr. Stern, why don't we maybe convert into that issue here, because the judicial foreclosure, you know, whether that's required or not, and that's an issue that's squared up in this case by Judge Alf. Tell us why, and that if the Nevada legislature has enacted these private foreclosure statutes, that we shouldn't follow them and allow the private foreclosure versus mandating a judicial foreclosure outcome.
Couple of responses there. One is that's what the statute says. It says institute an action. When it doesn't say take some action. This is not a verb. It's a noun, a lawsuit. Action means lawsuit in this context. And what Ms. Schuller-Heinz quoted during her argument, that there's a provision that says that in any action where there's a judgment or decree, that presumes a judicial action. So the statute contemplates that. Now, granted, we have now NRS 107090. We have that issue as well. Justice Gibbons, I don't disagree necessarily I don't argue that it would violate due process for the HOA to foreclose non-judicially. My argument is that it would violate due process for that sale to wipe out the pre-existing deed of trust unless there is, one, a judicial action, because that's how we guarantee that there's notice, or if the notices are sufficient. And the record in this case, I believe, is more robust than the last case. And in this case, there was an issue made of the notices. And while it may not have made it expressly in Judge Alf's findings of fact, U.S. Bank did argue that the notice was deficient in a number of ways. It did not say anything about a super priority lien. It didn't give us notice that it was foreclosing a super priority lien. It didn't lay out the amount. And so if you look at the notice, and we did make this argument below, the notice doesn't even tell us what the super priority amount is. The bank is left in a position of having, in SFR's view, to take additional measures to investigate what that amount is. That's not due process.
On the I'm in the neighborhood, but a slightly different issue. On the June 2013 report on the Uniform Commercial Act, how do we not follow that defensively? There is the lead-in statute that when we adopt a uniform act, we're doing so in the hopes of following national precedent, et cetera, and our legislature incorporates that. Our case law says we usually then look to other cases construing the same act and official commentary to the act. We then come along and in June of 2013 get this report, and I'm not quite clear on what this report is in the norm of things that interpret official uniform laws annotated, but I didn't find any cases cited by anybody, or my own independent research didn't turn up anything that says such a report does not command the usual judicial deference that official commentary would Do you have any observation on that point? Do you even understand what I'm talking about?
I understand the question. I do have some thoughts on it. I just want to confirm I have an extra 3 minutes.
You do to answer. Well, you don't, but you can answer the Justice's question.
Okay, because I thought I saw three pop up. Justice Baker, while we have a uniform act and the body that promulgates it does get deference, this act in particular was also directed, as all uniform acts, directs the legislature to tailor the act as necessary and to our state's particular circumstances. And in our state, and this is why we make so much of the public policy, it's very, very injurious to this court's and the legislature's public policy of foreclosure alternatives, of the policy behind the one-action rule, the policy of home retention, to allow a situation like this. Now, in this case, there was a bankruptcy and all of that, but in most cases, that's not the case. In most cases, the HOA can wipe out a borrower as well as the bank before the foreclosure mediation, and all of those foreclosure alternatives are even exhausted. Given Nevada's peculiar policy interest of home retention, given the industry practice that has come to this point, and really the superfluous the superfluousness of subsection 2B, our view is that the Nevada legislature could not have intended this result. It could not have intended for a wipeout.
And particularly because this is a post hoc commentary that wouldn't have been in place at the time they adopted the legislation as well.
I agree with that, Justice Baker, and particularly it came out at the tail end of the legislative session, but all of the public policy issues are unique to Nevada, and I doubt that the authors of this report consider the foreclosure crisis in our state and our response to it, which this court has been instrumental in. And in our view, you would do a lot of damage to that if you rule for SFR.
Justice Gibbons?
Yeah, I think Justice Hardesty and then Justice Douglas.
Mr. Stern, yes, this case is different than some others. Why isn't FSR a bona fide purchaser for value?
Because
do you dispute that?
We do. They bought a property knowing, having record knowledge that Southern Highlands CCNRs have a mortgage savings clause, expressly subordinating any super priority lien to the bank's lien. So they had knowledge of that. I think that negates super bona fide status. In addition to that, they did not pay a commercially reasonable price. And they take us to task for not having made that argument below. We would argue that we made it without using those words because the district judge Alf did say that the likelihood of irreparable harm if an injunction would not issue on behalf of SFR was minimal because of the minimal amount of money they paid versus basically a balancing of hardships versus the enormous amount of the deed of trust. So given the commercial reasonableness and given the record knowledge that they had of the CCNRs and the mortgage savings clause, we submit that they're not a bona fide purchaser.
Justice Douglas?
I'm in accord with Justice Hardesty, but going one step further, why is not the HOA a party to this? Why, Ms. Gilbert basically said your remedy should be against the HOA, not SFR.
Oh, that is a, you know, I think there's a lot of reluctance on the part of certainly the lending community, and I imagine maybe on the part of the investors to implead the HOAs and seek damages against them or make them a party.
They don't seem to care about you.
True, Your Honor, but that doesn't mean that we are, you know, there's reasons why we may not, you know, despite lack of love lost between the two sides. I think certainly if SFR wins this, and not only they, but, you know, all of the hundreds of properties that are issued here, they could open up some significant exposure to the HOAs. And we may make them parties, but I think part of what happened here may have been that this case, again, you know, is so old that, you know, and then came on appeal. That wasn't done in this case. It doesn't mean it's not going to happen necessarily.
Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Stern. And Ms. Gilbert, you have some additional time remaining, about 3 minutes.
Well, they raised a lot of stuff. First, Your Honors, statutory interpretation is going to begin with the plain language of the statute, not with the result that everybody seems to focus on, which is how much did SFR pay for the property, or in many of these cases. The question is, if it's so little, how come the bank didn't protect its priority by paying that little amount or even less? So it's not so much what was paid here, but what they could have done to protect their interest and chose not to, because that's a decision. The bank doesn't have to pay it. They get to choose whether to protect their priority, and here the choice was not to.
Does SFR qualify as a BFP?
Yes, Your Honor. Qualifies as a BFP for a number of reasons. First of all, the CCNR is irrelevant to determining that, because the mortgage savings clause that Mr. Stern brought up. First, since 1991, there's been the provision in 1104 that says that if something violates or is contrary to the statutes, then it in the CCNRs, then it does. It's not effective, and there is no way
that particular issue. And I was not going to get into that, but it's kind of problematic because by the state taking the action to go against the CCNRs, doesn't this now make it a kind of a state action, which really compels due process? Then, before the due process was kind of shaky, but if you have the state compelling to wipe out CCNRs, which would have just left it as a private action, now we're into a state action by the action of the.
I don't believe so, Justice Douglas, and here's why. I believe that what by adopting the UCIOA, what the state did was say there's so many HOAs out there. Some have some provisions. Some have other provisions. We're going to regulate, just like the state regulates 107 sales.
They can regulate, but it has implications if they do so.
And I understand that to a certain extent, because to take that tack will also say that because you have to go into the foreclosure mediation program, has the state now taken, and I don't believe it has, taken a 107 sale, which across the country, and the Ninth Circuit has said in looking at NRS 107, said that that is not a state action. That's a private action. The choice to enforce still remains. The choice to enforce the lien remains with the private actors that is the board of the HOA. So while they can't subordinate their lien, they have the choice on whether to enforce it, and that's what we have to look at.
Well, we have the situation, but for the action of the state, we wouldn't have that based on this language, because the clause was there, it would have protected, the state wipes it out, that is a state action. So doesn't that push us into a judicial foreclosure kind of posture?
I don't believe so, Justice Douglas. First, the CCNRs were drafted after 1991, so even putting it in, it was void from the outset. It shouldn't have even been in there, and the bank knew it. Second, it still doesn't put us. Due process is still being given. There's one lien. The bank knows it. They get notice. So I went through the statutes. They're required to receive the notice. They receive it. It's one lien, not two liens. The only party that's entitled to pay less than the entire amount is the bank. The bank has notice. They're saying the notice isn't enough. Under Mullane, under U.S. Supreme Court in Mullane, they have to have reasonable notice of the pendency of the action. That's the foreclosure sale. They can pick up the phone. They can use their deed of trust. They can pay the entire amount. They could have foreclosed. There's a number of actions that they can take to protect their interest. They don't need to be told the exact amount in the notice, because everybody gets the same notice. They have means to find out that from their borrower or from the HOA. With that, Your Honor, we submit that SFR is entitled it's title free and clear of the bank's lien.
I have one question for you. Is there anything in the record whether SFR, when it purchased at this sale, usually called the trustee sale, we'll call it a whatever it's called here for the association lien, was able to purchase title insurance on that? Anything in the record there?
There's nothing in the record, Your Honor.
Thank you. Okay, thank you both. Again, excellent arguments and briefs. Thank you all for coming here today to watch the case. We will take it under submission.